That really is the extraordinary thing about this. All you have is a bit of fluff about what a design might look like once he goes through a COAG process, once he consults with industry, but the headline for the Coalition Party Room is Malcolm Turnbull intends to kill renewables in Australia.
Well, that is Mark Butler, Labor's climate change spokesman, and our topic this week is, well, you guessed it, energy policy. Hello and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I am the host of this show. Now, I'm going to drop us right into this conversation without much preamble, and the chat happened at the end of what I regard as a really fascinating political week. Over the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to talk to Mark about the government's National Energy Guarantee, what he thinks about that, and where we think the energy and climate wars are more generally. Now, could we be on the brink of a peace? Well, I hate to throw the spoilers in there, but it really doesn't sound that hopeful at the minute. Listen up. Mark Butler, thank you for coming on the program.
My pleasure, Catherine.
So, I know this is a big ask in an interview between a journalist and a politician, but just for 2 seconds, can we try and pull the politics out of this equation and just...
Of energy policy. Well, that will be a challenge, but I'll give it my best.
For both of us, I suspect this is a challenge, but let's do our best. So what do you think of the National Energy Guarantee as a concept? I mean, given that's all we've got. What do you think about it as a concept?
Well, I'm not going to be drawn into giving a tick or a cross to a thought bubble. This is the problem with what Malcolm Turnbull has done. He's presented a letter from the Energy Security Board to his minister as a policy. It's not a policy. It hasn't gone through proper cabinet processes. It hasn't been modelled. And it was lumped on the states and territories, which are the bodies that actually have to implement this sort of a model. So, you know, we're not going to be drawn into saying yay or nay about a particular mechanism that is not designed. It's just there's not design there. All that we have is a piece of political cover to attack the renewable energy industry. And in that sense, we're going to oppose that. I mean, the assumptions based on what will happen to the renewable energy industry are just completely unsupportable. And that's all presented with a vague promise that in 3 years' time there'll be a 50-cent power bill cut to Australian households, maybe.
We'll drill down a little bit more into renewables in a sec, but just again, I'll have another go. What's wrong when you're in an environment where in energy policy in this country we've burned through emissions trading, actual carbon pricing, actual a carbon tax that was never even a carbon tax, when that's the reality that you're in, you're kind of running out of options, aren't you? So we're sort of there. Regulation is really getting to the only option that we've got. So if that's true, what's wrong with solving this by imposing an obligation on retailers, one about reliability and one about emissions reduction?
But it's not, I don't think it's responsible for the opposition to respond to a thought bubble. I mean, we've been genuine about our offer for more than 12 months now to try as hard as we can to reach a bipartisan consensus. We thought we had it last December over one model that Malcolm Turnbull supported, an emissions intensity scheme, then that got dropped. We thought we had it on a clean energy target, then that got dropped. These were both models that had been subject of very, very detailed work, you know, worked through with the industry, with states and territories that have to implement a whole lot of this. It was reasonable to expect us to make a response to this. This is a gimmick. This is not a policy even close to the level of development that the clean energy target and the emissions intensity scheme had. And it's not fair or responsible, I think, or reasonable to expect the Labor opposition to respond to essentially a gimmick. Now, Malcolm Turnbull has decided he's going to take two processes from here, one of which is to set up an industry consultation process and start talking about this because they were left out of the loop as well. And the other is to take this to COAG in November. What comes out of those two processes, who knows? It doesn't look particularly good at the moment. But it's not reasonable to expect the Labor opposition to respond to an 8-page letter without any modelling, without cabinet process, that simply looks like a dressed-up attack on the renewable energy industry.
Well, why do you think it's a dressed-up attack on the renewable energy industry? Talk to me about that.
Well, because the only detail really that you can grab onto from this letter is the detail that I presume Malcolm Turnbull felt that he needed to have to get this through the Coalition Party room. room, and that is a very, very low number for renewable energy penetration through the 2020s. So what he says, what the letter says, is that this would result in renewable energy accounting for about 28% of electricity by 2030. Just 28%. Now, we know, and the Minister, Josh Frydenberg, has admitted, by 2020, we'll be at 23.5%. So from 2020 to 2030, 10 years' time, 10 years' period, we would grow by about 4.5%. Mm-hmm. So less than 0.5% every year. Now, what that actually means is quite extraordinary. It would mean we'd only be putting in 250 megawatts of additional renewable energy every year for 10 years. Now, to give that some context, we currently put about 750 to 1,000 megawatts of PV solar on people's roofs. That's before you talk about any large-scale renewable energy projects being built. What it would mean is a cut of two-thirds to the current rooftop solar program. I don't know how you implement that, have sheriffs walking up and down the streets preventing households from putting rooftop solar on. And then it means you also don't have a single large-scale project built for 10 years. Now, that is utterly unrealistic, unrealistic.
The assumptions are just bogus.
The assumptions are utterly bogus. Now, presumably Malcolm Turnbull needed this to get through the party room, the right-wing group led ostensibly by Tony Abbott, but much bigger than that, wanted a very, very low figure in renewable energy. They don't want to see renewable energy grow. They want to see coal-fired power grow. Now, this is the only thing you can really grab onto and say that is a core feature that Malcolm Turnbull has obviously decided upon. And I tell you, there's no way we're going to support that. We're going to fight that tooth and nail.
Is it plausible, though, that if you remove subsidies to renewables? I mean, I agree that the figure, when you stop and reflect on it for more than 5 seconds, doesn't make a whole lot of sense and doesn't match up with current market behaviour. But if you remove subsidies from renewables from the equation, because the RET obviously peaks in 2020 and then tapers out to 2030, that might slow activity though, mightn't it?
No, I don't think it will, and I don't think the industry thinks it will. Alan Finkel, when he modelled what would happen in renewables if the government just got out of the way, saw very substantial growth. Bloomberg and others have projected even more substantial growth than the chief scientist did, just on business as usual basis. Because what we need to understand in this debate is that about two-thirds, according to the industry itself, about two-thirds of our existing thermal plant, so our coal and gas plant, is operating beyond its design life. It is going to shut down over the next decade or two, much of it between now and 2030 or around 2030, and it needs to be replaced. So the question is, what do you want to build to replace it? Now, Tony Abbott is urging Malcolm Turnbull to build new coal-fired power stations to replace that. And frankly, this is a model that would give some incentive to coal-fired power stations being built. Everyone else understands there's one path forward for the electricity industry. It's renewable energy. That's recognised across the world. It is now the cheapest form of new build for electricity. The challenge is whether you embrace that or whether you resist it. And this announcement by Malcolm Turnbull says that he intends to resist it. So that really is the extraordinary thing about this. All you have is a bit of fluff about what a design might look like once he goes through a COAG process, once he consults with industry. But the headline for the coalition party room is Malcolm Turnbull intends to kill renewables in Australia.
It's obviously, we need to keep focus on the government's policy because this is the new thing in the public domain this week. So I'm not setting up this conversation as a fixation with Labor's policy. But nonetheless, given everybody in the energy sector, every business person I've ever spoken to about this issue thinks that Labor is as important a player in this as the government, in the sense that any fix needs to be a bipartisan fix. Otherwise, we're just on this hideous roundabout of problems in this area, right? So I just want to think about the different pressures on federal Labor at the present time, right? How important is the attitude of the Labor premiers, for example, in federal Labor's decision about whether or not you support this policy or not? For example, obviously Jay Weatherall is very angry about this process at the present time. Now, he may calm down or he may not. In the event that Labor premiers going into elections in their states, in South Australia and Queensland and other places, turnaround for entirely valid reasons or political reasons or a combination of the two decide, nah, we don't want a bar of this, what do you do? Is that a veto on Labor's agency federally or not?
Well, the issue here is that Malcolm Turnbull has put sort of the vague concept of a plan that requires the states. Like this is actually, I mean, I think the thing that infuriated states is that the premiers turned on the television and saw the Prime Minister conducting a press conference with the Energy Security Board announcing effectively what the states would do.
Yes.
Because this all has to be implemented by state and territory governments. So if you can't get the agreement of state and territory governments, well, you know, it's not happening. It's just not happening. And I think Jay has really got to the core of this plan. Like, don't worry about the sort of mechanisms and the technical detail, but the core of this plan, it's quite clear, is to kill renewable energy investment in this country and prop up old coal-fired power stations. Now, potentially also to pull through new coal-fired power stations. That's certainly still the plan that many in the coalition party room have, most notably Tony Abbott. But at the very least, this is a plan to prop up old coal-fired power stations for as long as possible, no matter what the cost. And we know, for example, just to do that with Liddell would cost $900 million that could otherwise be invested in long-standing renewable assets and kill renewable energy investment. Jay's got to the heart of this. But as a matter of process, Malcolm Turnbull's chosen the process forward. He cannot do this without getting the agreement of all of the state governments. Now, also note, it's not just Labor premiers. Will Hodgman has been pretty negative in his commentary about this. The Tasmanian government has said at the moment that they're not in a position to express a view, that there's much more detail they want to see. They're pretty unimpressed at the moment.
So it's sort of like, in a way, I'm asking you an empty question. Your point is if the states veto it, the Commonwealth hasn't really got another avenue to get its policy up.
That's right. And Jay's exactly right about this. This is a plan to kill renewables and prop up coal. I mean, he's got right to the essence of it. Now, there's a whole lot of politics in this as well. I mean, Malcolm Turnbull's behaviour towards South Australia, but also some other states, but particularly South Australia, a state that I have to,
announce I'm from, yes,
has been utterly extraordinary. It's been shameful, utterly shameful, advising people not to invest in one of the states of the Commonwealth. Some of the stuff he's come up with about renewable energy is just utter lies. And suddenly he expects premiers who've been the subject of a merciless, shameless political campaign to back him in on the basis of an 8-page letter that he announces on TV. I mean, there is a real political challenge here for Malcolm Turnbull, given the degree to which he has played such base politics with this, name-calling, political sloganeering, and now announces, sort of ambushes the states and territories with a thought bubble.
But in the event the Commonwealth, you know, the states all said, get nicked, we're not interested, and the Commonwealth came back and said, well, actually, we've got a cunning federal plan where we can do this without you.
Oh, a clean energy target, perhaps, reflecting the chief scientist's long, hard work.
Look, anything's possible.
Sorry to cause you exasperation, Catherine.
No. I've had quite a frustrating day. But look, anything's possible, Mark. Perhaps we could be discussing the clean energy target. But you know, don't deflect. The Commonwealth could come back and say, okay, states have vetoed it, but we have a cunning plan to implement it anyway, which again puts you back into the equation.
Well, it's very hard to see how that sort of a model gets implemented at Commonwealth level. I mean, that was
the national energy market.
Yeah, the clean energy target. The clean energy target was essentially a Commonwealth model. There'd obviously have to be buy-in from the states. And Malcolm Turnbull, for reasons that still escape me, or I know what they are, they're essentially political, they're not policy reasons, has turned his back on the clean energy target. So if he has trouble at COAG and wants to talk about another pathway, well, we have one that's pretty recent. It's still pretty current, and it was developed by his own chief scientist in a report he himself commissioned.
Can we talk about price just for a second, just again a little bit conceptually? Now, we saw a bunch of figures emerge this week as part of the Energy Security Board's advice about how much this would save households from 2020 to 2030. And it was pretty obvious from the locutions in the document, even before anyone opened their mouths, that these figures were rubbery, to say the least. And they survived in the court of public opinion for about 5 whole minutes. Is it time for governments in the energy and climate space to have another conversation with voters. And it's a conversation that goes like this. We're transforming an entire electricity market. We're turning over technologies from, you know, one sort of technology to another sort of technology. We're also pricing externalities like carbon. Basically, you can't do all of that and lower prices for consumers. I understand the debate about investor certainty, and if you create policy certainty, that has a positive effect on wholesale electricity prices. Totally get it. Understand prices may come down a bit because part of the reason they're high at the moment is policy uncertainty. However, as a general point, it's not a magic pudding. You can't do all of these things. And part of the reason energy debates fall down in a screaming heap is that various leaders get hoist on their own petard. They set up various propositions. You know, a clean energy target will make you a cup of coffee, change the sheets on your bed, cure cancer, etc. And obviously it won't do those things. So is it time to reset the debate and be a bit more honest about the costs of a transition in an electricity market?
Well, let's step through that. I think Australians who pay a bit of attention to what's happening in the electricity market understand that it just so happens that a whole bunch of our kit was built in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And over the next period of time, they're going to shut down. Already we're having real reliability problems, particularly in New South Wales. We've seen reliability problems with some of those old generators, and you have to replace them. You have to replace them, or if you want to extend them, as Malcolm Turnbull wants to do, some of those old coal stations, you have to invest a lot of money to keep them running, like a car. You have to invest a hell of a lot of money. So the question is sort of how you do that. Like Malcolm appears to be presenting a policy that has a focus on pumping money into old coal-fired power stations so they keep running for longer than they otherwise would. That is going to feed into power bills and probably in a pretty unproductive way. I mean, Liddell for 5 years costs $900 million apparently. What could you do to build assets that will last 40 years? So I think people understand that, you know, roads deteriorate over time, they've got to be repaved. You know, electricity plants deteriorate over time, they've got to be maintained, and then at some point they shut and they've got to be replaced. So the question is, what do you replace it with? I think people get that as part of their power bill, there's a whole bunch of things. There's poles and wires. There's wholesale power costs that reflect the sort of operation of existing plant, but also the fact that plant needs to be replaced over time. So let's have an honest discussion about that. And then let's ask ourselves, what's the cheapest way to replace that plant? Well, it so happens that the cheapest way is going to be renewables. And over time, renewables that is firmed up with batteries and with pumped hydro and all that, that's going to be cheaper than replacing this with new coal. It's going to be cheaper than extending old coal for 4 or 5 or 6 years. And I think people get that. The research shows people get that. This debate's trying to pretend otherwise. Like what Malcolm Turnbull's presented over the last few days tries to pretend otherwise. And I don't think the Australian people are going to buy that.
What are you, now, about Labor's policy, I mean, obviously we've got a number of imponderables here that we'll end on imponderables just to cheer the listeners up. Obviously, you've got to decide whether or not this concept is going to fly with the premiers or not and make your own...
I don't decide that. The premiers and the Prime Minister decide.
But I mean, it affects your policy offering for the next election.
Sure.
Regardless of how this plays out. If it falls over in a screaming heap, well, then maybe Labor sticks with its current offering to voters. If it doesn't fall over in a screaming heap, maybe you do this, right? So what sort of thinking is this generating in Labor at the moment about how you might have to recalibrate, reposition? You face a lot of questions, for example, about your 50% by 2030 goal, I'm saying in air quotes, because it is a goal according to your... Well, it's what your policy documents say.
Well, I've been on the public record on more occasions than I could count, and I can count pretty high, saying this is a rock-solid commitment.
But is it a target with a capital T?
Well, it's a target with a... It's a target in the sense that it will be binding. it will be binding. Now, it won't have the same design as the current renewable energy target. So I think that's the confusion. When I say it's a target, people say, oh, you're extending the current renewable energy target where there will be certificates that retailers get to buy and sell. Well, no, that's not my view. It comes back to an earlier question I don't think I asked of you, answered of you, and that is, you ask, I answer. and that was, well, you know, what happens post 2020? What can renewables do? We always had the renewable energy target was always planned on the basis that by 2020, renewable energy would be able to stand on its own 2 feet and compete in a properly constructed market. So there was effectively a technology pull-through policy that provided subsidies to an industry that was still emerging and it needed support to get up and running. And actually, that's probably happened a couple of years ahead of schedule. But certainly by 2020, no one has any doubt that in a properly constructed market, renewable energy can compete and win. It doesn't need subsidies. The question is how you construct that market. So what I think is curious about this debate in Australia about energy is like we've become so focused on the mechanism. And at some stage, we're going to have...
Because we've had so much contest about the mechanism, and we still don't have
one. Exactly. So ultimately, we're going to have a mechanism that we can present to the industry that gives them some confidence that it's going to endure, that it's going to have stability. But the real point, once you strip away that sort of bureaucratic, mechanistic detail, the real point is what's your vision? What's your vision for Australia's energy future? Our vision for Australia's energy future is a renewable energy future. And central to that is our commitment to ensure that at least 50% of Australia's electricity is generated from renewable resources by 2030. Now, there are a range of ways you can deliver that, range of different mechanisms and markets. You could do it through an EIS. You could do it through a clean energy target. You could do it through a carbon pricing mechanism. The mechanism really is just about giving investors certainty. It's not going to determine whether or not renewables win the day. They are going to win the day. You talk to anyone in the industry, they say it's not like there are two paths forward, a coal path and a renewables path. There's only one path. And as I said before, the question is whether you're going to embrace that or whether you're going to resist it. So we are committed to the 50% renewable energy target. And really, once we get past this debate, which I hope will happen at some time, over mechanisms and bureaucratic detail, the difference between Labor and the Liberal Party is we're embracing a renewable energy future. We have a clear commitment to 50% by 2030. It will grow jobs. It will drag through investment. It will start to clean up our electricity system. And it is the cheapest way of replacing our ageing electricity infrastructure. What's clear from this week is Malcolm Turnbull has a very different vision. It's a coal-fired future. The sort of vision that Tony Abbott promotes has now been embraced by Malcolm Turnbull.
I'm going to have one more go because you've refused to bite every which way I've asked you the question. But in your vision for your renewable future, let's say this National Energy Guarantee doesn't fall in a screaming heap. Let's say it gets up. Is one way you could achieve that vision for your renewable future, upping the level of ambition for the emissions reduction target for the electricity sector, because it's scalable. This model is scalable.
Absolutely. So, but we've been honest. We've been very upfront with everyone, with industry, any forum I speak to, the states and anyone who's listening, really, that whatever mechanism you come up with, whether it's an EIS, an emissions intensity scheme or a clean energy target or something else that Malcolm Turnbull ultimately is able to agree with the states and with the industry, either way, we're going to use it to deliver 50% renewable energy by 2030.
So the answer is yes, in other words. So if it flies, you will up the level of ambition on the emissions reduction.
I have been crystal clear about that, as has Bill Shorten.
Mark Butler, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Catherine.
Well, thank you so very much for listening. We really do appreciate your support. Thanks, as always, to Miles Martignoni, the producer of this podcast. Just a reminder that you can subscribe to the series using your favourite podcast app or equivalent. If you are downloading us via iTunes, be sure and leave a rating or a review. It is very helpful to the visibility of the project. Now, Federal Parliament is back again next week, and I will be back again Also, I'm very hopeful over the next little bit of getting the Federal Energy Minister, Josh Frydenberg, also on the program to have a chat to him about this this energy policy and where it might land or otherwise. It just was a flat-out week for him this week, and he wasn't available to come on the show. But fear not, I will continue to pursue him. While I do that, you all take care of yourselves, stay hydrated, and I'll see you soon.